Forum Heather, and on behalf of my partners, I want to acknowledge how much we value our partnership with the Middle East Forum and the times that we have to co-sponsor informative and hopefully enjoyable and fun luncheons such as the one we're having today. And my pleasure is doubly enhanced because I have the opportunity to introduce our very distinguished speaker, Dr. Rachel Ehrenfeld, who, as most of you already know, is a person with a PhD from the University of Israel. She's done a lot of work both at NYU Law School and at Columbia University. She is the author of a number of major and groundbreaking works on financing terrorism, the most recent of which is available for purchase outside, Funding Evil. She's a frequent visitor to talk shows, and she is also the director of the Manhattan-based American Center for Democracy, another think tank. So without further ado, it is my pleasure, and let's give a welcome to our guest speaker, Rachel Ehrenfeld.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad I was able to make it despite the hurricane. Not funny, trains are not running exactly. So, last week, President Bush told the nation that terrorists have grown bolder over the last decade. He blamed inaction on the part of the U.S. in the last decade before he became president on this fact. What he didn't mention was another major reason why terrorism has become bolder and why it has become so widespread and so deadly. And that is because it is extremely easy, ridiculously easy for terrorists to obtain huge amounts of money to fund their activities. Terrorism consists of two components, ideology and money. Ideology is slow, money is fast. Mao Zedong told us that the fastest method is the barrel of the gun, but to buy guns you need money. Should we be reassured that with the fact that in the last 24 months we didn't have any additional attack on in the U.S., or should we look at the terrorist financial bottom line to determine what kind of danger we are really in and what other surprises they are holding in the arsenal for us? When it comes to choose side in the war on terrorism, it is clear that nothing talks louder than money and lots of it. Money supersedes both long-standing political allegiances and diplomatic agreements. This was made painfully obvious to me 3 weeks after 9/11 when I spoke at an international conference in France on the connection between terrorism and organized crime. I was the only American speaker at this meeting. I described the horrors I saw recently in Manhattan, because I saw the World Trade Center from disappearing in smoke from my window. And I pointed out how the similarities between how terrorists and how criminal organizations generate money. I called upon the few hundred academicians and jurists and bankers and law enforcement officials and reporters who attended the conference, mostly French, to intensify their efforts to expose and to stop funds from reaching not only Al-Qaeda, but all terrorist organizations. I expected that my remarks would be embraced, and I was not prepared for what happened next. Remember, this was a few weeks after 9/11. The following speaker, a high-ranking French official, began his speech by saying, "I identify with Bin Laden and understand his agenda." He went on to say that the U.S. deserves this attack. In fact, he said, the U.S. brought it upon herself with her unjust attitude towards the Palestinians. But there was something wrong with his remark. At the time, Bin Laden had not mentioned the Palestinians at all. It took him 6 weeks to talk about the Palestinians. Instead, he called for killing all Americans, Jews, and other infidels, including Christians, and for destroying the U.S. economy. Yet the French official who might have been expected to be an ally, repeated his statement that the U.S. was punished because of its policies regarding the Palestinians, and he completely ignored the role in the agenda of Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. All the while, the audience encouraged him to go on, and when he finished his diatribe against America and the Jews, the crowd cheered him. The contempt towards my country, the U.S., only a few weeks after thousands of people lost their lives in a terror attack, was so palpable that I left immediately before the conclusion of the conference. At first I couldn't understand where this French enmity comes from. But then it occurred to me that this French official might have had a private agenda that fueled his venom. So I decided to look into it. It didn't take me long to discover his true motivations. He was seated on the board of a Saudi bank that the U.S. Treasury Department identified and listed as supporting terrorism. By the way, this bank was removed from the list a few weeks later. This was a perfect example of how Saudi money influences politics. This discovery cemented my decision to further explore the reasons for the West's complicity in the financing of terrorism. Not all the money comes from the Arabs. The West is very, very much complicit in this whole business. Even though President Bush continues to demand that the funding of worldwide terrorism be stopped, we are very far from identifying all the sources that finance terrorism and the methods employed in raising those funds. The Saudis, by their own admission, have spent more than $87 billion. And it's interesting because $87 billion is the sum that the President is now asking from Congress to fund the war on terrorism for 1 year. However, the Saudis spend this money over a decade on schools, mosques, and Islamic centers to spread Wahhabism. And you know what Wahhabism is. And to teach them how to hate America. These, the institutions that they have built, constitute the breeding grounds of the foot soldiers for the global Islamic terror movement. And although by now we know that the Saudi funding for terrorist organizations is widespread and is ongoing, political considerations and possibly oil are preventing the administration from holding our so-called allies responsible for the role in creation and support of the global Islamic terror network. Now we are being told that they are cooperating, but the extent of their cooperation or the value of their cooperation and their sincerity remains to be seen. The Saudis are not the only source for terrorist financing, far from it. But getting to the bottom of this problem is difficult. When you read your morning newspapers, you will not find out how terrorists around the world actually fund their activities. Nobody is saying in the papers who is paying for their travels around the world. They move from here to there. Who is paying for it? When you and I travel, we pay for it. Who is paying for their arms? Who is paying for the experts that they bought to develop biological and chemical weapons? And so on and so forth. These are the pressing questions I sought to answer when I set out to write Funding Evil. How terrorism is financed, but I also thought about ways and how to stop it. Because we can do things to stop it. I set out not to expose really how this whole mechanism works, but also to try and develop ways that are maybe sometimes naive, but because they depend on political will, but they are doable. For the past 2 years, the media has made frequent mention of how the terror attacks of 9/11 cost between $250,000 to $500,000. Essentially the price of flight schools, rental cars, airline tickets, and box cutters. But in reality, to enable this operation, a huge infrastructure was in place over many years, and it cost billions of dollars to establish. How those billions of dollars were used? What have they been used for? They have been used for recruitment, for training camps and bases, for equipment, explosives, and conventional and unconventional weapons and their development, forged identity and travel documents, intelligence gathering, communications among the organizational components, bribery, lots of it, to politicians and reporters in many countries. Day-to-day maintenance expenses of members awaiting command to launch their operations. Terrorism also requires money, lots of it for propaganda. And all of you who know Daniel Pipes know what kind of propaganda was geared against himself and his domination, know that this costs a lot of money. Paid demonstration costs a lot of money, and the paid demonstrations are carrying messages of hate that terrorists then can use to incite mobs against targeted enemies. The terrorists also need money to maintain sleepers and their families, as well as to compensate terrorist families when the terrorists are killed. This total cost billions. To sustain this operation, sophisticated, multifaceted, and worldwide funding network have been set in place over the past two decades. And the funding sources for terrorist organizations comes from mainly governments such as Saudi Arabia and Iran, charitable organizations such as the Muslim Arab League and the International Islamic Relief Organization, just to mention two, legitimate businesses operating as funds, such as communication, cell phone distributors, travel agencies, and suppliers of medical equipment, just to name a few. The exploitation of financial markets, especially the unregulated commodity markets. International trade, which converts cash into precious commodities such as diamonds and gold. Terrorists also generate money from criminal activities, such as extortion, smuggling, kidnapping, prostitution rings and trafficking in people, credit card fraud, identity theft and counterfeiting, pirating of videos, compact discs, tapes and software, and trafficking in illegal drugs. To help with the funding of this complex operation and to enhance their global reach, terrorist groups created partnership with all international criminal organizations. But often this partnership is lopsided, with the terrorists invading the turf of the criminal groups, such as the Russian Mafia and the Colombian drug cartels. What was particularly astonishing to me was how passively the criminal accepted this new arrangement. They didn't try to challenge the terrorists. These are the Sicilian Mafia, the Russian Mafia, the Colombian drug cartels, and here comes the terrorists are coming and saying, now we are providing you protection and you give us money. And they did nothing. They just paid them. Why? Because they are afraid. So this is not a very encouraging combination. This nexus is complex and frightening. It links money, geography, politics, arms, and tactics to create a mutually beneficial relationship, a very dangerous relationship. Take drug trafficking, for example. In 1992 alone, close to $1 trillion was made on the illegal drug trade. A decade later, the exponential growth in drug consumption worldwide pushed those estimated profits as high as $2 trillion, which is the estimate today on the drug business. According to President Bush, terrorists use drug profits to fund themselves to commit acts of murder. And he added that it is so important for Americans to know that the traffic in drugs finances the works of terror, sustaining terrorists. There is no other commodity in the market today that yields such high and fast returns as illegal drugs, and this is not a recommendation to go into the business. In addition, it is the best weapon for terrorists because it is a triple-pronged weapon. It helps terrorists to A. finance their activities, B. undermine targeted countries politically and economically and create crisis in public health, C. recruit new members by citing drug use as an example for Western social degeneracy while arguing that such corrupt societies must be destroyed. This is the best weapon, period. Finding out how this enormous crime and terror empire operates is no easy task. There is a sea of information out there in the public domain, but only a very tiny portion is credible. The terrorist ties to the media and often to politicians enable them to disseminate disinformation and disinformation quite easy. I've been following the connections between rogue states, criminal and terrorist organizations for the last 18 years. It is both mind-boggling and frustrating often to see the same operatives involved in more and more complicated cases are becoming more and more threatening, and if an individual, me, can follow this, connect the dots and expose it, where are the authorities? Where are they now? Let's take the UN. There are many instances in which the UN has actually aided and abetted terrorism. We all know about Iraq and the food for oil scheme, which left the Iraqi people starving and their infrastructure crumbling. At the same time, this food for oil scheme landed $100 billion in the pockets of Saddam Hussein, tens of millions in the pockets of the French, the Russian, the German, a few other countries, as well as in the pockets of politicians. This scheme has landed at least $1 billion in the coffers of the UN for commission. So they were making money on it, a lot of it. The US funding of the Palestinian terrorism is another example. In 2002 alone, UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, distributed $521.7 million to the PA for the Palestinian people. This is in the height of the Intifada. Despite this money, most Palestinian people have to survive on $1 to $2 a day. Where did the money go? While the Palestinian Arab refugees constitute only 17% of all other refugees in the world, they receive more than one-third of the funds that are allocated by the UN to all refugees in the world. In 2003, this year, UNRWA will spend at least $350 million on the Palestinians. 30% of UNRWA's budget is contributed by the US, and the EU is the second largest donor. But the UN contributes only 4 to 5% to UNRWA, from which to pay money to international workers. Most of the workers are, 99% of UNRWA workers are Palestinians, and most of them are known to be Hamas members. In fact, the joke among the Palestinians is that UNRWA is the Hamas union. You can get a job at UNRWA if you are a member of Hamas. Textbooks laced with clear anti-Semitic, anti-Israeli, and anti-American propaganda are what daily lessons are taught from. A Palestinian intelligence report from December 2002, seized by the IDF in one of the raids, details how the UN Social Club in Gaza holds meetings of the terrorist organization Tanzim regularly, and how in the refugee camps run by UNRWA, Palestinians store ammunition in UNRWA schools and smuggle arms in UN ambulances. The UNRWA spokesperson, when confronted with this, protested, "Our schools, teachers, and doctors aren't the ones to root out Hamas." No, but they encouraged them. When the Israeli search camps run by UNRWA, they discovered stashes of illegal arms, bomb factories, and plants manufacturing the two Qassam 2 rockets designed to reach Israeli population centers from the West Bank and Gaza. All this is done with UN money and under the watchful eye of the UN. Terrorism is also bankrolled and facilitated by the Europeans, whom we presume to be our natural ally, or presume to be our natural allies and friends. Despite 9/11 and the discovery that many terrorist cells in Europe are operating, the EU continues to adhere to the appeasement ideology or process instead of war. It was the EU that initiated the mid-1990 peace for land talks with the Colombian narco-terrorist organization, the FARC. Those negotiations led to thousands more Colombian deaths and to the loss of 50% of Colombia's territory. The war still rages and the violence and drug trafficking continues to flourish. It was the EU that initiated the land for peace talks between the Palestinians and the Israelis, first in Oslo, and now with a roadmap that leads nowhere. Yet the European Union has persisted in allowing various Hamas-related organizations to collect and channel money to the West Bank and Gaza. This freedom has had significant effects. Most non-Hamas foundations may have been shut down in the United States, but in the ensuing 20 months, they have sprouted like crazy in the United Kingdom, complete with fundraising, propaganda, and organizational recruitment. You should see, you should just see what is happening in England. They are all over the place, and the British are not, are doing absolutely nothing. Recently, 9/11, the London-based Hamas Islamist group that supports Hamas and Al-Qaeda, Al-Mahajirun, celebrated the second anniversary of 9/11 attack and issued cards of the Magnificent 19, the 19 hijackers. The British authorities dismissed this incitement as freedom of speech and the activities of the organization as religious. Despite U.S. attempts to freeze assets belonging to terrorists, we are very far from cutting off their financial lifeline. All totaled, only $136 million have been frozen by the U.S. and other governments. Most of it, more than $75 million overseas, actually more than $90 million overseas, and much of it has been defrosted since, because the European countries say that, well, it was not very clear, and the laws are not complying with theirs. It may have not been a crime, so very little money has been frozen. And whatever has been frozen doesn't seem to impede the ability of either Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Jamaat Ismailia to recruit members to finance their training and travel plans and to plan future terrorist activities. To win the war, we must concentrate on eliminating as many sources of terrorist funding as we possibly can. We cannot eliminate all of them, but there are a few that actually quite many that we can. To do that, the U.S. should treat all terrorist organizations and all the countries that support them equally, including Saudi Arabia. It is not only Al-Qaeda. By now we know that all Islamist groups, including the Sunnis and the Shiites, cooperate with each other. So going only after Al-Qaeda will not be very useful. And while they thrive on this evil synergy, we have yet to get our intelligence agencies to really cooperate with each other. We have developed a lot of technology, but technology is as good as the people who operate it and as their willingness to share the information that they get. Without this cooperation, we cannot effectively connect the dots and prevent other terror attacks before they happen. As for the major sources of terrorist financing, the illegal drug trade, the U.S. can and should utilize new technologies to permanently destroy coca and poppy plants. There are new micro herbicides that were developed with a lot of money from the U.S. They are available, they are cost effective, and have been tested and shown to work in an environmentally safe way. The U.S. government is not using them. Why not? Afghanistan has more drugs than ever before. Colombia too. Terrorism, like organized crime and drug trafficking, flourishes only when abetted by corrupt governments. Years of silence, indifference, and willful blindness by the West have greatly exacerbated the problem of corruption mostly in Muslim developing and third world countries. Thus far, most of the anti-corruption good governance program funded mainly by the U.S., along with the World Bank and the UN, which are in turn funded by the U.S. too, have resulted in more, not less, corruption in the world. The terrorists have capitalized on this to advance their agenda. Look at what happened with Liberia. How much money had been stolen in the last 20 years? Nobody knew. He was there dealing with Hamas and Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda, selling diamonds, buying arms, selling arms, having terrorist training camps there, and nobody knew. It's inconceivable. President Bush initiated a promising program, the Millennium Challenge Account, which is meant to help developing countries to get rid of corruption, reduce poverty, and improve the standard of living among their people. This money will be wasted, or worse yet, be used against us, unless a new standard to evaluate the recipients of U.S. taxpayer dollars is implemented. And a new standard has been developed. It has not been implemented yet. I have developed a new standard. And as long as the money continues to flow, the terrorists will continue to invest in our demise. We must demand and enforce methods to stop all funding to all terrorists by all countries, organizations, institutions, and individuals that support terrorism. Failure to do so will only invite another terror attack, possibly worse than September 11. I'll be glad to answer your questions.
Yeah,
well, somewhere did
you want
to? Because you mentioned the Millennium Effort. Who do you find is responsible for blocking these changes in standards in your account?
The World Bank. And what is being done in this country
as far as that from our perspective? Not yet. We are continuing to give money to countries like we did before. Now we are going to give money to Indonesia, for example. Indonesia is not our friend. Indonesia has training camps. Indonesia is working with Chabad. They are refusing actually to admit that they are working with Al-Qaeda members are there. So why are we going to give them quite a few million dollars? I have no idea. But we are going to do that. We are going to continue to give money to Jordan. We are going to continue to give money probably to Syria. We are continuing to give money to the PLO. We are continuing to give money to Egypt. Why are we doing that? These places are hubs for terrorism. So,
from this administration, Islamic groups here,
money is still going out through USAID, through the EU, through the UN. The initiative is very, very good, but it has to be really implemented in a better way.
Recent action by the European countries saying that they're going to stop making funds available to Hamas. Will that have any substantial effect on they're going to get money from
They declare that they have France decided that Hamas is a religious organization and they didn't close anything.
Did France go along with this decision?
No, France didn't. But, so everybody from Europe can channel the money to France to begin with. But in countries where Hamas was now recognized as a terror organization, they have started new organizations with different names that are actually Hamas branches. I've been to one in London recently when they launched a new organization that is a Hamas organization with a different name. And the British are doing nothing. There were lords and members of parliament there, and then they are not about to close it down. This is to support the Palestinian people. So I'm not very hopeful.
Listening to all the information shared, it sounds overwhelming and hopeless because it seems so tremendously funded and well organized, and you say the best way is stop the funding.
Yes.
How do you do that? What resources are available to accomplish that end besides saying, stop it?
This is not to encourage you to buy the book, but I have a whole chapter about it in the book and what can be done. But there are many things that we can do because we have the laws, and what we need very much is to, besides implementing the laws, is to have better intelligence. Not more technology, but better intelligence, and use that intelligence better. So what the President wants, says that he really wants to improve on government agencies cooperating with each other, like yesterday they declared that they have now one centralized terrorist list. Well, we can have that and have more information on who the terrorists are, and then this will enable law enforcement to follow the money, if you know who are the suspicious people. But we need to develop better information also from our banking community and financial institutions, because if it was not for them, then the money probably couldn't flow so easily. And American banks have been barely punished, aiding terrorists or aiding money to go to terrorists is both a civil crime and a criminal. It's a felony. And American banks that have been involved with transferring money to terrorists, despite the fact that they have the list, have been fined ridiculous sums of money, like $1,500, $1,200, $956, and well, they were transferring millions of dollars. And their names were not published. Why not? Because the banks are saying that, you know, if you say that, first of all, that the terrorists will know that they can do it in our bank, so we don't want, you know, more terrorists to come to us. Well, how about enforce the law so the terrorists will not come there? These are all kinds of excuses. The banking lobby is too strong, and unfortunately, if we don't clean house and if we don't enforce the laws within our banks, then I don't think that we can do much about elsewhere.
What about the use of litigation, civil liability initiated by the victims to go after the sources of financing?
Yeah, that's very good. Unfortunately, it's taking very, very long. We don't have the time to wait that long. It's a very good tool, yes. And it should be. There should be, everybody should sue terrorists. If we know the countries are involved, we should sue them if you can identify who is the perpetrator and go after them. But we have to be realistic. How visible it is that we can actually get something in return or stop their activities. And especially if you look at the Palestinians or the Saudis, suing the Saudis, the government is still claiming that Saudi Arabia is cooperating with us, well, and they are trying to do everything in order to dismiss the lawsuit.
Yeah, hearing your talk and just what I've been reading recently on the Wall Street Journal editorial page, I'm almost of the opinion that the UN is actually a threat to American national security.
It is. It's been for a long time.
And I would ask you, if you were granted by the Bush administration or any other policy-making authority with regards to the UN, how would you approach the institution?
I would cut off all American funds. That would be the first step that I would do. No American. I would cut off all American funds. We don't need the UN. Yes, please.
Has the World Bank always had this leaning towards anti-Israel? And always?
Always. Absolutely. Always. And not only it has it actually has a lot of anti-American, although most of the money and the voting power is America, but it has been anti-American for many, many years. And boy, go and meet and talk with people who work at the World Bank. They really hate America. They are living here. They came from God knows, you know, all kinds of countries. They are living better than they could ever dream of. And they are perpetrating corruption with our tax money in different countries. They don't like America. They are not following American policies. And what happens very often to American officials who work at the World Bank, in order to survive in such a hostile environment, they sometimes suffer from the Stockholm syndrome, and they start sympathizing. Okay, so we will have to compromise, and things are not happening the way they should.
We read so much about how the Saudi money is so heavily invested.
Just one thing. I'm sorry. I was I don't know, about a year and a half ago, an article dealing with the World Bank and how the World Bank is funding the Palestinians, how much money they gave the Palestinians, and how the money has been used. And I received hate mail from officials of the World Bank. So this is just an example. I'm sorry.
When you read about how heavily the Saudis have sunk money into everything in this country, somewhat impossible to try and track what collusion there would be here to defend all the interests that are.
But, yeah, true, but those interests are known actually. Those are the easiest to find out. But it is, those $87 billion, most of the $87 billion that they had spent in the last decade to expand Wahhabism is money that came from us. We paid them for the oil. So they are taking our money and they are using it against us.
I'm also referring to all the different companies.
Yeah, we all the oil companies and... Well, then they will do something else.
Can you share with us the name or the position of the French minister you spoke of at the beginning, and is that person still in office?
This person is still in office. I can tell you who he was. He was the head of the... he's a former judge. He's not in his office anymore. He was a former judge who was, at the time, the head of the diplomatic school at the Quai d'Orsay, which is quite high. I'm still working on this issue, and I didn't want to...
Yeah, it seems to me that person should be identified by you or whatever, and they could last very long in office if there's proof of their having said it.
Oh, but the bank, yeah. Oh, there is proof.
Maybe there's a transcript or even a tape of it.
No, they took it off the transcript. But it was televised, and somebody who was with me recorded it.
Okay.
So I have the proof.
Yeah.
I also have the... I was in shock.
Don't wait too long. Get that out, I think.
No, I'm working with it.
Well, down at the end.
Yeah. Century Rachel was really fascinating. What about the university connections? We had this guy at Century recently at the Harvard Divinity School.
They invest whatever they can to change it. They are following what the Soviet Union had done in the past. And everything that the Soviets had done, spreading their influence, the communists, has been now taken over by the Muslims. And they are doing it all over the world. And many of the same people who were, it's really the left, the radical left, is the same radical left that is supporting now the Muslim radicals. So it was easy, and most...
Because they hate the West.
Because they hate the West. And they have, most terrorist organizations have been trained, most of the leaders of terrorist organizations have gotten their training in the former Soviet Union, by former Soviet operatives. Most of the people are operating, including the Hezbollah and others, including members of Al-Qaeda, have been at the PLO camps in the Bekaa Valley. So, or in Sudan, where they were trained by the PLO and the East Germans and the Cubans and you name it. It is the Soviet Union may be gone, but
it's there in spirit.
It is there.
But the other point of actually exercising there are some mechanisms with the U.S. government, just as our basic foreign policy in an area that doesn't make the news much these days, Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your tri-border area.
Tri-border region.
In Brazil now. You mentioned the drug problem.
Yeah.
There are ways, transparency has never been their strong suit. They are attempting commissions now in Mexico and other
but
places.
But
that's not the way.
But who is appointing the commission?
What is the problem? What can they do? They do have to cut off part of the funding.
They can by insisting more on really fighting corruption. And that's what I'm trying to do, and I'm trying to... there was some interest initially from people, for example, at the IADB, Inter-American Development Bank, but politically it's very hard to push. So I was asked by Wahid, the former Indonesian president, when he was elected, and he came in with a lot of goodwill to fight corruption. And he asked Clinton, when he met with Clinton, he wanted me, by name, to come and help him fight corruption. Clinton, of course, didn't know who the hell he was talking about. And the World Bank opposed my going to Indonesia. They did everything they could. And so the American ambassador arranged for my going there, and I met, and I came up with a plan. I was there for 10 days, and I met with anybody I wanted, and I gave them a plan. I went out with a team of what to do in order to start cleaning up, actually to establish a new attorney general's office and prosecutors. and how to start cleaning the Ministry of Justice and the Supreme Court, etc. And the World Bank, when they saw, because it was a good plan, and when the World Bank saw that it is, well, this is what may happen, and they went to the president and they told him that the representative of the World Bank went to the president and told him that he should be very careful working with me, because I'm not only an American who works for the CIA, I'm also an Israeli who works for the Mossad. And I had to leave Indonesia because they feared for my security. So, yes, please.
Obviously, the Western European countries are as vulnerable as we are to terrorism.
Yeah.
Why this antipathy toward the United States and its efforts?
Because they, first of all, they think that the U.S. is a new country. They don't have much experience in diplomacy. We, the Europeans, have been here for many, many decades. We know how to deal with the Arabs. We dealt with them. We stayed in there. We took over their countries many years. We know their culture. We know how to deal with them. They won't hurt us. Besides, they are here. We are doing business with them. Nothing bad will happen to us. Actually, the convergence of the interest of the Muslims and the Europeans is the same. They want to undermine the U.S. economically. They don't want the U.S. as a superpower. That's where this animosity is coming from. They don't see, they don't believe that they will be hurt by the all this big Muslim population there, and they are wrong.
We can take two or three more questions.
The question is, which U.S. senator is most supportive of your efforts, and which Democratic presidential hopeful do you think it would be most supportive of your efforts?
That's not an easy question.
I don't know of any political figure today that will not say, or today or any day, that will not come out and say, oh, I will fight corruption. Who can say that they will not fight corruption? Everybody says that they will fight corruption. What they are going to do afterwards, I have no idea. Which senators and congressmen, they don't see it as somehow, because the whole issue of, and I really don't understand why. To me, if you want to stop something, you stop money. If people don't have money, they cannot do anything. So why is it so difficult to understand? If the senators didn't have money, they won't be able to do anything. So why is it so difficult to understand that you have to go after the money? You have to stop corruption so that the money will go to the people. Because if there is corruption in third world and Muslim and Arab countries, the terrorists are cashing on it. They are the ones who are providing services. And we have to change the situation by seeing to it that there would be better governments, that the people will have food to eat and will be able to support their families. We are not doing it. Why not? I don't know. I think we need to educate them a little bit more. I'm trying to.
Do you feel that Bush's program of democratizing Iraq and turning Iraq into some form of democratic government and using it as an example to the rest of the Middle East has any chance of success, knowing the mentality?
You're asking me as a prophet, or since prophecy is not exactly my trade, I would hope that they can do something there. But I think that it's very important that they succeed in some way, definitely at this stage. But I think that they should have started actually with the Palestinian Authority, because they should have removed Arafat. And they should have started working, remove Arafat and everybody that came with him from Tunisia, and have other Palestinians who are there. There are some Palestinians who are not involved in all this, but they are afraid to speak. They are definitely afraid to speak up. And start anew, because that's much easier to probably to clean up than Iraq. But they, and as far as I can tell, they have to do both very, very soon. How successful they will be?
in your article in a National Review.
Which one?
One of the things right here. Yeah. You review the position taken by the president with regard to Arafat, and you indicate that if we're going to have a chance for peace in the Middle East, Arafat must go.
Absolutely.
Do you think that action should be taken, such as suggested, that he be exiled?
I think that all these Israeli officials talk too much. They can take him and isolate him, throw away his cell phone, and keep him without any communication. What's the big deal? He cannot be in touch with anybody. Nobody can be in touch with him. He's finished.
Yeah, that's a much better plan than trying to exile him.
I think that's very simple. Why aren't they doing it? I have no idea. But to me, it seems like
basically house arrest. They could do it tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. And take him out of the mukata, so he's not there. Put him in the nicest house in Ramallah, and you can keep him there. Why not? It seems I don't know, seems kind of simple to me.
Okay, well, thank you very, very much for being with us.